Hi, I'm Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matter. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Unfortunately, we often make poor choices and look back at them with bafflement. Our errors are what make us human, but until now, they've been largely ignored by those around us, whether they make complex public policy or sell us on a plain old bottle of wine. In a new book, Nudge, economist Richard Thaler and legal scholar Cass Sunstein invite us into an alternative world, one that takes our humanness as a given. They show us that by knowing how people think, we can design choice environments that make it easier for them to choose what is best for themselves, their families, and their society. We'd like to welcome you to the program, Richard.
Thank you.
Your book deals with a concept that you call choice architecture. What is choice architecture?
One of the examples we use in the book to motivate the whole idea is the story of somebody who's the director of a cafeteria and discovers through trial and error that the order in which she displays the food items influences the choices that people make. So if you put the fruit in the front, people are more likely to eat the fruit. If you feature the burgers and fries, people go for it. In the cafeteria I eat in every day at school, the first thing you come to is the salad bar.
So it's the physical layout of the cafeteria you're talking about.
That's right. The design of that acts as a nudge. The fact that I see the salad bar before I get to the pizza nudges me toward eating the salad. And that's where we got the term nudge.
Some people might say, hey, wait a minute. Gaming the system to encourage certain choices amounts to manipulating people. What do you say to that argument?
I say yes, but I also say that it's impossible to avoid nudging. So let's go back to that cafeteria example. You have to arrange the food somehow. It wouldn't make any sense to have the salad bar scattered all around the room. Presumably, it's efficient to put it all in one place. It has to either be in front of the burgers or behind the burgers. There's one company that makes very delicious cinnamon buns. And one of their marketing strategies is to pump the aromas from their ovens out into the hall. Now, that's a nudge. That nudge is like a magnet. So we can't deny the fact that these influences exist. One of the cute experiments we talk about in the book is if you put mirrors in cafeterias, then people will eat more healthy foods. You could go a little bit further and you could put specially designed mirrors that are unflattering. Suppose you had mirrors that made you look even fatter than you are, then you would just head for the non-fat yogurt. Now, of course, we could also imagine some fast food outlets putting in thinning mirrors. So you go in there and you say, supersize me today. I can afford it.
I'm looking good.
Yeah.
Some people might say that nudging is a controlling thing, might see it as manipulative. How do you respond to that?
It could be used in evil ways. We've talked about some, and it can be used to be helpful. We're writing a book about nudging, and the first goal is to point out that it's possible to do it. The second is to urge people to nudge for good. One of my favorite examples in the book is there's a stretch of Lakeshore Drive in Chicago, which is a beautiful road that runs right down the coast of Lake Michigan. There's a little windy part, a series of S-curves. It goes right in front of Oprah's apartment. It's dangerous. People wipe out there every day. There are speed limit signs, 25 miles an hour, that people don't pay any attention to. What the city did is they painted white lines on the road, and as you reach the most dangerous part of the curve, the lines get closer and closer together, which creates the illusion that you're speeding up. You instinctively put your foot on the brake. You're nudged to slow down. That's a good thing. Of course, you could paint the lines farther and farther apart and deliberately get people to drive right into the guardrail.
It's these unconscious cues you're picking up.
Right. So, yes, the city could try to create more accidents. If Mayor Daley were being bribed by the local repair shops, Fortunately, the mayor decided that saving lives and cars is a good idea and adopted this plan.
One of the things you suggest is that companies consider implementing choice architecture into their employee benefit programs. Some have already done so. Tell us about the Save More Tomorrow program that some companies have adopted.
The idea of Save More Tomorrow, which is a program I developed with my colleague Shlomo Benarzi, is that many people in 401k plans or other retirement saving plans say they realize they're not saving enough and they wish somehow they could save more, but they either can't afford it right now or never get around to changing the situation. We developed the Save More Tomorrow program to solve this problem. What we do is we get in touch with people and offer them the opportunity to commit themselves now to saving more later. This exploits the fact that we all have more self-control for the future. Many of us are planning diets starting in a month or two, not tonight at dinner, much less today at lunch. So they can commit themselves to saving more later. And the way they do it is they say, I'll increase the proportion I save every time I get a raise. Linking it with raises exploits another feature of the psychology of decision-making, which is that people hate losses. This way, they never see their pay go down. Right. So their raise just doesn't look quite as big as it would have otherwise. People like that. People have signed up for it. And now thousands of companies are offering this plan all over the country, and it's now spreading worldwide.
You also propose that companies should adopt nudges and choice architecture when it comes to their relationships with their own customers. For example, you suggest that a credit card company should send people annual reminders of how much they paid in fees and interest. Now, companies might be hesitant to go down that road for a variety of reasons. Why do you think it makes good business sense for companies to take that approach?
I'm not sure that it makes good business sense, and it might not make sense for everyone. After all, credit card companies make a lot of money through late fees and the like. And in fact, we've proposed in the book that the companies be required to reveal this information. One of the big themes of our book is disclosure and transparency. So what we've proposed is that in the credit card domain, companies be required to give all of their customers two electronic files once a year, one of which lists all the ways they charge, be like a spreadsheet, and the other would be a list of all the things their customers did to incur a charge. And the idea would be, we wouldn't regulate how much you could charge, we would just make it easy for people to figure it out. And they could take these electronic files, upload them into a search engine, and find what the best credit card company would be. We think this would make markets more transparent and more competitive. Now, in the absence of such a regulation, I would encourage some firms to do that. It would really facilitate having a reputation as a fair dealer, somebody who's trying to deal with their customers in an open and transparent way. Not every credit card issuer might want to do that, but I think there would be a real role in the marketplace for someone who did.
Another concept that's discussed throughout the book, as far as nudges are concerned, is this idea that you explain as defaults. Can you talk to us a little bit about defaults?
A default is just what happens if you do nothing. Typically, what happens if you do nothing is nothing. But in some situations, if you do nothing, something happens.
It triggers something.
Right. If you're sitting at your computer and you do nothing for a while, the screensaver comes on. What we know is that people are lazy and busy and inattentive, and they often take the default option, whatever it is. A simple example of that is when you're watching TV and one show ends, and the next thing you know, you're watching the next one, because the default option was for the set to stay on the same station. Now, the costs of switching in that situation are one thumb click. But still, even though the costs of switching are so tiny, networks spend millions of dollars figuring out what the best schedule is because they know that watching is sticky. We've used that idea in lots of situations. Back to the savings domain, one of the most effective ways of getting people to join the 401k plan sooner and in greater rates is what's called automatic enrollment. In the standard situation, when you're first eligible for the 401k plan, you get a bunch of forms to fill out. You have to pick some investments, pick a savings rate in order to join the plan. If you don't fill out those forms because you find them intimidating or you never get around to it, then you're not in. In many companies, as much as 40% of the people don't join. Under automatic enrollment, when you become eligible, you get all those forms and a note that says, if you don't do anything, we're going to enroll you at this percentage rate and we're going to invest your money there.
That's the default.
That's the default. And we know that under that system, over 90% of the people enroll. Since 401k plans, especially when there's a company match, are pretty much a no-brainer, we think that making the default joining is a good idea in that situation.
Richard, I want to wrap this up with just, is there such a thing as a self-nudge?
Absolutely. We sometimes jokingly refer to those as snudges. There's an alarm clock you can buy called Clocky. What it does is if you don't get up, it jumps off the night table and runs around the room being annoying, and you have to chase after it to turn it off, and that's probably enough to get you up. Perhaps more useful is make as much in life automatic as possible. Set up an automatic payment scheme for any bill that comes in, particularly your credit cards, so that you don't pay those late fees, but make sure if you set up an automatic program for your credit card, it's to pay the whole thing off. It turns out that they make it a little difficult to do that, and they would like you to pay the minimum, which will maximize the amount of interest you pay. And what you'd really like to do is pay off the whole thing.
The name of the book is Nudge, Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness. And we've got one of the authors here today, Richard Thaler. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Kevin Lee, and I'm here with Wendy Kaufman, president of Balancing Life's Issues, a nationwide corporate training company that focuses on work life and health issues, and she's also a faculty member of AMA. Wendy, welcome.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm excited to be here.
So we just listened to this interview with Richard Thaler, and his insights apply to all levels of the corporation, from top-level strategy to marketing and so on. What do you think are the key takeaways for managers?
I think it's such an interesting idea, this idea of nudging people. It's a newer concept of managing. So it's how do we nudge them in the direction that we would like to see them go, which at the end of the day is all about being a good manager.
There are a couple of AMA seminars that are related to what Richard's talking about with nudging.
One of them that we teach here is the voice of leadership, where we spend a huge amount of time on influence strategies. So we're defining leaders as people who influence and inspire others. And of course, nudging is a big part of that. So the concept of nudging and that course of voice of leadership really marry very nicely together.
Can you give a specific example of a nudge strategy that you teach in the class?
Asking someone to do something that they're not sure they can do is a very big part of leadership. Somebody's confidence level is not quite there yet, and we really need to influence them to believe that they can do it and that they can do the very best job that they can. We actually take an assessment on influence strategies, which ones are we really good at, and which ones do we need to work to get better. So there's a variety of nudge techniques that we focus on.
And what do you tell participants who are uncomfortable exerting their influence or they don't quite know how to do it?
One of the greatest things that that course does is define the difference of a real leader. By definition, a leader is someone who does that. So they have to learn how to step up to that plate. And they may have to try six techniques before they find one that actually works.
Are there other classes besides Voice of Leadership that deal with nudging?
Of course, nudging is about how we communicate. So developing effective business skills and developing communication with diplomacy, tact, and credibility. One very clear thing in nudging is the way we've come across, the words that we've chosen, the tones that we've chosen, when we've had the conversations, how we've had the conversation. We live in a big email world. Is that a good nudge technique or maybe not so? So those are two specific courses that really also go very nicely with this book.
Those seminars, again, are Voice of Leadership, Developing Effective Business Conversation Skills and Communicating with Diplomacy, Tact, and Credibility. If you're interested in registering for these courses or finding out more about them, just visit our website, aminet.org/seminars. Wendy Kaufman, President of Balancing Life's Issues, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
It would be great to hear your feedback on this program, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.